The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
We are a numbers game presented by BetMGM. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel. Paul Carr is going to join us at the bottom of the hour in studio. We got a lot to get to in the world of football, international football, not American football, if you will. Can't wait to talk to him about that. Like you said, the Women's World Cup and, of course, the impending Gold Cup that'll get started in about a week. So I wanted to open this up because we've had a lot to talk about. I wanted to ask you, Kelly, because this is something that came across for me. I wanted to do this story from Florio, if we could, because I thought this was an interesting topic, and it's one that, of course, hits on a lot of notes here because we're a sports gambling network. So for those who didn't see the story about 2 days ago, there's allegedly an NFL player who has lost $8 million in the last year gambling. Don't know who it is. Obviously, it's a very big figure in terms of numbers. I'm not saying big figure in terms of his status within the league. And Mike Florio jumped on that, wrote a story about it. And since then, we've seen some commentary from Florio over on Pro Football Talk about just gambling in general when it comes to NFL players and their ability to do so when it comes to betting on sports outside of the National Football League. So this was something overall. This was in Florio's article, but it's from his co-host on PFT Live, Chris Sims. Says, quote, Chris Sims had an interesting idea during Tuesday's PFT Live, one that could qualify him for one of the other four spots in Howie Roseman's top five NFL conspiracy theorist list. By the way, I don't get that reference.
I don't know what it is either. Right. Let me Google
you're,
it.
You're though. A very well-traveled man. I figured that you would know. Sims wonders whether these sports books want young men with plenty of disposable dollars and a possible itch for the dopamine rush that comes from winning a bet to be able to do so. It's not a crazy thought. Hey, NFL, we give you a ton of money to be one of your various official sports book partners. Help us win some of it back. Why don't you? So, in other words, what we're saying here is that the NFL allows these guys to bet on other sports outside of the NFL because in secret rooms behind closed doors, sports books, like, you know, guys with big FanDuel badges on their chest and, you know, DraftKings, they're like, hey, by the way, let them bet so we can get some of their money. And it's like, do you understand? We've actually seen some of the figures that come from some of these guys who have been betting.
Yeah.
It's not that much.
Right.
We have one outlier guy who has lost $8 million doing this.
Which, and real quick on that, because I think that whenever we talk suspensions and stuff for the – because Gil and I have talked about this a bunch. It's going to keep happening. Why is it going to keep happening? Because, yes, players have access, but it's also being monitored way more closely than what it was in the past, right? So I've frankly been more shocked by the amounts, the small amounts that we've seen these rich guys betting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I'm way more surprised about that than hearing about a guy losing $8 million.
Right.
Like, that's kind of what I expected to see all the time.
And do you realize the flaw with the theory that, hey, the NFL's doing this because the books want them to put rich guys to bet money? First off, there's no guarantee that these guys are going to bet anyway. And, as you just said, the guys who have bet have been, for them, betting like potatoes, nothing.
Yeah.
Like, minuscule amounts. So I think it's fun. It's not even fun is
plus,
the right term.
Just pull up what the dollar figures are for these deals.
Correct.
The amount of money that the leagues are striking with these sportsbook partners is a staggering dollar figure. There is no way that they're trying to skim a few bucks off the top by like, hey, why don't you guys just let your guys do this so we can make a few more bucks.
By the way, if that was the deal, wouldn't the NFL actually then promote sports gambling to their players? Be like, remember, guys, you can play other sports. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Welcome to minicamp. Reminder, baseball season underway. Bet now.
Hey, minicamp sponsored by, you know, and slap a logo on them. And I think, like, so first off, that's ridiculous. I think it speaks to, again, I say this all the time. Like, we talk about this all the time. I know Gil does a good job with it. Like, when we're talking about, like, mainstream media, I like the phrase that Gil uses, right? We fly pretty close to the sun, so we can't really understand. Mainstream media still doesn't have really a big read on how this is. And I will say, I think that this now is starting to become, Kelly, guy, and I won't single out Florio, but because he wrote this, we're talking about him. But guys like Florio, we've talked about Wilbon and these other guys, weird disdain for Vegas when it comes to, you know, its fingerprints being on the league that they cover, that it's going to be easy, low-hanging fruit and fun for them to grab negative sports betting stories and to discuss this. So, of course, we're going to leap on the fact that one guy lost $8 million gambling. We got to talk about this. Yep, this is it. And it's like, well, okay, that's one guy. It's one guy's mismanagement of his funds that's going to happen. And the other part that I think kind of rubs me the wrong way, and I want to say I think I put it poorly when we were talking about a Lombardi line the other day when I filled in with Stormy, but it was, we know that some of these guys, when it comes to their money, they're really lucky. You were bringing this up. Who was it that was being mentored? We were talking about it financially for some of these rookies.
Well, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, yeah, right. Where some of them were told, like don't get an agent the first, you know, your first year, because where you're selected, it's a locked-in deal. You don't need to, you know, give your money to somebody else.
Yep, handle it smart. Pay scale. Yep.
Right. But, like, these guys get also wrapped up in poor investments, poor, all of these stuff. And I don't, like, do we see the exposés on this sort of stuff all the time? No. And nope. I think because it's the new vice in terms of sports gambling, that guys like Florio will jump on this at any moment. And I think it's, I don't know if it's irresponsible, but I think it's somewhat unfair to the industry that is well-regulated, well-monitored. We know about these dollar amounts because it is regulated and monitored. These incidents where we're talking about Alabama baseball and others have been caught. Like, I think that we have to realize, the collective we here, and especially guys like Florio, that this is something that is monitored and taken care of, and that you don't need to just leap on every negative story because you don't agree with the premise that players can gamble.
Yeah, and I think for the when it comes to the actual shows, personalities and stuff that are doing it, I mean, I get it to a degree, JVT, because I think it's JVT and I have both worked in sports talk radio for a long time. Like, I did that for 10 years before I came out and been working solely for VSiN. You are still doing it and have been doing it for a while. I think personally, me 7, 6, 7, 8 years ago was very frustrated at the idea that I couldn't talk sports betting on a sports talk show. That I was being prevented from doing that because it wasn't, you know, legalized, and it was a taboo subject and all of that stuff. And that's why I wanted to come to a place like VSiN, right? So legalization, PASPA happened, legalization happened, and this is why I wanted to come to a place like this where we could actually not only have a discussion about it, but actually it be the focus of our discussions, right? I think there are the other guys, though. They're dealing with a change in reality, and people are not usually comfortable with change. So there are a lot of people, and it is usually the guys that have been in this business for 30, 40 years, that have gotten very used to doing their job a certain way. And now, yes, they have sponsorships of their own kind, as like we talk about with the league. A lot of these media companies are sponsored with sportsbooks. And, they're kind of told that, hey, if I don't know what they're being told they have to do, but I think it's almost irresponsible to talk about sports these days without including the odds, at least to a degree. I think what you see Scott Van Pelt doing every night on SportsCenter is the way that it should be discussed. He doesn't take 20 minutes to dive into the odds, right? But he brings them up when he's connecting it to a sports story. I think you have a lot of these guys that are very uncomfortable with doing that, because why do I need to do that when I've been doing it this way for 30 years?
Yep.
Right, and it's uncomfortable for them to have to change. So it leads to things like this.
Yes, it does. Also, you know, when I was reading throughout the football season, Florio's weekly ATS picks, no real, not a lot of work, not a lot of verbiage in there in the articles every single week about. But I really don't think the NFL players should be able to do this. You know, you can use it for your coverage and for clicks, but hey, man, I don't know, conspiracy theories and whatnot. So I thought it stuck out. We'll see. Eventually, I'm sure the player will be named. Who lost $8 million, because that information comes out. And if that's the case, because it was brought up too, like, well, if he's got $8 million to lose, he's a really rich guy, then blah, blah, blah. If it's like a $70 million contract, that's still 11% of your total contract that you signed. That's not healthy in terms of that. So that's definitely something that should be discussed. If a guy is losing $8 million a year in terms of sports betting, that is safe money practices that need to be discussed. But these guys do need that overall. When it comes to investing, when it comes to all of those things. And they do get some of it, but that's just, I find it a little unfair when you're bringing it up in this sense.
Absolutely, because I think you're talking about it perfectly. It is already, there are a lot of investment things and stuff that these guys have to be coached on, and why this should fall right in line with everything, all those other discussions. Yep.
All right, with that, baseball, we do have some early starts today. Actually, just one. It is going to be out there in Chicago. Kyle Hendricks is going to get the start here for the Chicago Cubs, taking on the Baltimore Orioles. Hendricks, as of right now, if you're looking at him on the season and what he has done for Chicago, a relatively solid year, but this is an interesting matchup for multiple reasons. The first of which is Hendricks does fit the parameters, Kelly, of a guy that I'm always kind of looking for, right? Those differentials, if you're talking about the ERA and the expected fielding independent, a 3.09 ERA for Hendricks so far, but a flat five in terms of his expected fielding. Strikeouts, you know, he's never been a dominant strikeout guy, but this is his one of his worst years in terms of strikeouts since his rookie season back in 2014. So he's not getting guys to swing and miss, and generally wasn't either to begin with. Slowly over his career as well, he hasn't been inducing ground balls at such a high rate. Last two seasons, I'm including this season, I should say, this season and last, well under in terms of the ground ball to fly ball ratio. So he does fit quite a few parameters that I think I'm looking at for Kyle Hendricks to potentially be a guy to play against. And I think that this is a lineup in the Baltimore Orioles that can take advantage of some of those discrepancies when you're looking at it from a, you know, a play on perspective. The Cubs just slight favorites here, minus 108. The problem, though, is Cole Irvin's going to be on the hill for the Baltimore Orioles. Irvin hasn't been great, and there's no real signs. How about this? A 7.85 ERA, an 8.41 expected ERA for Cole Irvin. So it has not been really well at all. The big thing for him, again, kind of like Hendricks, he's never been a dominant strikeout guy. His command has been a really big issue this year, Cole Irvin. Walk rate at a career, I guess it's, is it a career high or career low when you describe something negative? Either way, it's the career worst, we'll put it that way, 9.2% in terms of the walk rate so far for one Cole Irvin. And if you're looking at some of the other, like StatCast, batted ball stuff, been giving up a lot of hard contact, 11.7% barrel rate for one Cole Irvin. So if you're looking at this overall, one of the things that I like to do when you have two pitchers like this, you could potentially look at this game as a potential over. If you're looking at both of them, win though, blowing in at Wrigley, I know that alters a lot. It didn't have anything here, but a pitching matchup that could provide some entertainment because of some bad pitching. All right, we got some guys out on the course. We'll update what's going on in the U.S. Open, see some early scores, see if there's anything to really pounce on. Remember, coming up in 30 minutes, Paul Carr is going to be with us in studio to discuss some international football.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN.com. Head up to the top, hit the betting tools tab, find everything that we have to offer. One of those things, of course, the betting splits. You can get money and bets for every single game. It's updated every 10 minutes. Numbers are courtesy of DraftKings. You get today's game, future events, and more. And for all the bets that you can think of, not just, hey, money line, what's that? No, everything. You want splits for run line, you want splits for the total, you want splits for the money line, check that out up at vsin.com. Also at vsin.com, Adam Burke continues to do a great job writing up the Major League Baseball card and our headline story, reloading for round two. What did VSiN's golf experts learn from the first round of the U.S. Open and how they will apply it to the next round? Let's see. I'm scrolling. What? I see Matt Brown. I see Wes Reynolds. I see Matt Eumanns. It's Kelly Bidlin.
I was asleep.
You didn't participate?
Hey, I'll be there tonight. I'll be there tonight.
Actually, it happens. The other day, Bill asked me for something for the newsletter, and in my defense, I was asleep.
It was a late request. Let me put it that way.
Let's see. Wes, with a lot of graphs and a lot of analysis, shockingly enough, the longest write-up of the three. Matt Eumanns, I'll let you guess if he was the longest or the shortest.
I'm going to go shortest.
Matt Eumanns is a – hey, man, he gets to the point. Gets to the point.
I'm gonna go. Eumanns shortest, Wes longest, Matt Brown in between.
Yep, pretty much. You got it right. Now, Wes Reynolds, I think, suffers, but there's some spacing issues. I'm gonna go in the back end and fix this thing at some point. All right, so I'll ask you. So U.S. Open, we are out on the course. There's nothing really to glean a ton of, like right now. We have some early guys out there, but as we watched 262s come in yesterday, and we have guys out on the course right now. What are you expecting? We got a couple of guys. Wyndham Clark's already making his push up. He is one under through one, so birdie's the first hole. He's at seven under, just a stroke back from Fowler and Schauffele. We have guys like Andrew Putnam right now, one under through two, so he is down three under so far, and some other guys that are on the course having a little bit more difficult time early on. By the way, as of now, and this is too early to read, what would you expect? I'll ask you this, Kelly. Given the way it's scored and your knowledge of what you expect to happen, what do you think the projected cut might fall in? Would give me a range.
So right now, ESPN has it at plus one. I think you're probably looking plus one, plus two, somewhere in that range.
So it's not going to get so wild that the projected cut would get pushed up to, like, even?
I mean, maybe, but I doubt it.
Okay.
So there, I mean, right now you've got 52 golfers. I'll take it back. I mean, right now by the numbers, just based off of yesterday, it's more likely to go to even than two over.
Yep. I mean, we do have, and these are a couple of really big scores, but Wilco Nienbar? Am I saying that right?
No, but you're okay.
Okay. How do I say it? I want to say it's proper.
I got to look at it.
Oh, come on. You
it's,
don't
it's
know.
Wilco Niedaber, I believe, is it.
Niedaber.
It
thank
is,
you. Yeah. Appreciate it. And Carlos Ortiz.
He's like the biggest driver out there.
Okay. I appreciate it. I apologize, Wilco. But Carlos Ortiz, both of these guys for the tournament right now, 3 over and 4 over, but both are 2 under. Through an early portion of their round through 2 and through 4. So it early, at least right now, as Victor Perez adds to it too, he's now 2 under. So we got 3 guys that are 2 under early on. At least early on, it's playing again somewhat nicely for these guys. You think this is just an early morning thing? And that as we get later, that this is going to start to get a little bit tougher for some of these
guys? Maybe a little bit. Yeah? Again, I don't know if I expect to see a huge change, a big change until the weekend. I mean, where I think they already have planned, you know, some more difficult hole locations. There's some things they can do on these tee boxes as well to make some holes a little bit longer if they feel that they want to do that or shorter. You know, depending on the hole, that makes it more difficult sometimes. But I think yesterday it was a lot of the weather, and look, maybe this course is just a little bit easier than what we all thought it was going to be.
Yep. The second wave starts at 12:15 p.m. Pacific time. So that'll be, you know, that'll be the start, as we called it, that late wave, and we'll see if there's any going to be any massive changes. So John Rahm, the only ad, 24-1, and that's going to be it for me and for you. Do you play any specific round, Matt? Like, so from here on out.
Yep.
Like, matchup-wise, will you play, like, just, hey, second-round matchup, third-round matchup, fourth-round matchup? Or will you just dive into, again, like, rest-of-tournament matchups, like, when they're reset?
Great question. Same answer as kind of what I talked about. More of my betting, I'm waiting till after the cut.
Okay.
I will absolutely do round-by-round matchup betting. I usually don't do a ton in the second round unless there's something that really jumps out to
right.
me. Today, there was nothing.
Yet. All right. That's what I would think.
Gives you a little bit more stats to work with through two rounds, right? You can, especially with a tournament like this, like you said before, a course we haven't seen before, gives me another day to see a course, see how the golfers are reacting to it. Then I can go from there.
Yeah, the other thing that sticks out, too, is I wouldn't say the lack of respect, but since I don't have a better term, I will. I wouldn't say no belief in Ricky Fowler, but there seems to be a tepid belief in Ricky Fowler in terms of this thing.
I mean, it's tough. I mean, we already had – you had what – Xander was what? Like the sixth shortest shot on the board to, you
right.
know, to begin with, so, somewhere in that range. So, I mean, he was 18-1, 16-1. So – I think he's the rightful favorite, but when you've got names, you know, Dustin Johnson 2 strokes back, Rory 3 strokes back, you know, Scottie Scheffler 5 strokes back, who's just been dominating tee to green the past couple months, and, you know, he actually putted okay yesterday. That should be terrifying to everybody out there. Let me just you know, he did gain over a stroke on the field yesterday with his putter, Scottie Scheffler,
yeah.
who has been losing strokes gained putting tournament after tournament here while he's setting records tee to green. So if that guy putts this week and he plays as well as he's been playing here tee to green recently, there's nobody that's beating him. That's why you're seeing him still at 7-1, 8-1 for this tournament, basically his pre-tournament odds.
All right, last question for me then. So if we're tying in, like we talked about with like the tee times and whatnot, when you're looking at it, some of these guys, so we're talking about, well, I'll specifically bring up Dustin Johnson, Brian Harman, and Rory McIlroy, guys who played really well yesterday. So we're talking about 6 and 5 under for those 3 guys, but also get early tee times today. Would those be guys that you're looking at making some really strong moves, considering they're already under par and they're going to get the benefit of going out somewhat early?
I think DJ is the one to keep your eye
yeah.
on the most. I didn't even – what were the other 2 names you said?
Brian Harman, Rory McIlroy.
Rory definitely. Brian Harman I don't expect to be.
Do we trust Rory to not implode on Sunday? Like he has each of the last 2. Like
I mean, look, I'm not really – I don't think I'll be interested in putting a Rory bet in at any point this week,
yeah.
this week, but I'm still going to respect what the guy's done in the past. I think obviously he's still a world-class player. Brian Harman I don't think is going to be around in the conversation when we get, you know, when we get to Sunday. So I'm not expecting a move by him. I caught this note from Kyle Porter earlier, and I guess it was from Elias Sports, but most times shooting 65 or better in the history of major championships, after yesterday, DJ moves into a tie with Tiger Woods. That's how low
really?
he's gone that many times in majors. 10 times, both those guys have done that. He passed Jack Nicklaus for that. So if this is a scoreable course, that's a guy we've seen do this time after time with in the, you know, in the past. I don't think you'd be shocked if Dustin Johnson makes a big move today. I mean, he was – yesterday he was tops tee to green, gained over seven strokes tee to green. He didn't even gain on the field putting. This is what we've been seeing usually from Scottie Scheffler. Those are the stats that we've been seeing. That guy's putter heats up a bit. Well, man, he might be jumping to the top of the leaderboard.
By the way, the other name I wanted to bring up really quickly, because it was a name that we talked about really briefly because he kept popping up. No, and by no means out of it at this point. But Mito Pereira, one under. He's now back to even through one. But for a guy that was very popular in like some outrights that I was reading in terms of making some noise, top 20s and whatnot, I guess we'll qualify it as a rough start for a guy that there was a lot of expectations for.
I am very intrigued to see how both of the Chilean guys do, Neiman and Mito Pereira, because they were obviously we saw Mito in that PGA Championship last year. He had one hand on the Wanamaker Trophy before he gave that thing away to Justin Thomas. We've seen what he's done. He's still a very young, talented player. Made the decision to go to LIV, so it's kind of been off of our radar. Joaquin Neiman, same thing. He's a guy who's won on the PGA Tour. He's won on the PGA Tour. He's an extremely talented young golfer. Love what he does off the tee. He's a guy I was really looking for. And he's made me some money in the past, JVT. Like, I was really looking forward to watching him have a long career on the PGA Tour. Makes the jump to LIV. We've barely seen him outside of these majors. Yep. So I think those are the type of guys. Those are the type of guys that were some of the most painful for me to see leave for LIV, because they're still so young, talented. You were looking forward to watching them for years, decades to come on the PGA Tour. You don't get to see them now, but it makes it. You know the talent's there, but you haven't seen it be played out yet.
Was that you who played the Chilean matchup?
No. No, I didn't okay. do it.
I was talking to somebody who had played the Chilean matchup. I think it was Neiman over Mito Pereira, but it could be like
I threw a bomb. It was one of my. We didn't even talk about it. I did throw a bomb bet in on Neiman at like 130. I think he finally drifted to. But I prefer him over Mito, but I know there was a lot of love for Mito Pereira this week. Yep. He has been playing well since when we've seen him.
Well, Neiman right now, one over through two. So, again, a lot of these guys are early on out there on the course. All right, when we come back, we could talk Major League Baseball futures. We talked about the American League MVP market, the way that Shohei Ohtani has been absolutely dominating over the last week or so. I have this here. Kelly has a division question?
I got multiple division questions.
Okay, all right. Let's talk divisions in Major League Baseball and a little bit more in terms of some of the actual games, because we've got a fascinating pitching matchup coming up later tonight.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A lot of reasons to become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. One of the reasons, you get a daily email recapping all the best bets from show hosts and guests. You also get an unlimited access to our VSiN.com picks page, where you can sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard, view betting records, profit, ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. I almost committed the cardinal sin there. I almost slipped, called it VSiN, which is when I do a lot of the guest hits. That's what I get a lot. It's Jonathan Van Tobel from VSiN.
How you doing, Van Tobel?
That's one of the things I'll never understand. It's like an O. It's an O. I don't know why you immediately go to Van. It's such a weird thing.
Yeah, it is.
It's not even the other sound
that's
the O.
That's way more odd to me than the VSiN.
Yeah.
Like, I get that. I get that. But then you just say VSiN one time to people, and they're like, oh, I get it.
Yep, I get it. It's VSiN, Sin City. I get it. Okay, so we do have – I wanted to hit on – I mentioned a pretty intriguing pitching matchup later today. It's going to go down in Arizona. The Diamondbacks have lost three straight and comes on the heels. By the way, I don't know if you saw this yesterday. Dodgers, some quotes coming out of Los Angeles that they're kind of feeling it. They've been a little shaky so far. But a good win for the Dodgers last night, game-tying grand slam, and then a walk-off later on a sack fly. So the D-backs maybe feeling some heat after losing three straight. Again, I don't think the Dodgers are ever really going to go away in that division. But they're at home today. Zach Gallen is going to get the start here for the Diamondbacks. I mentioned this is an intriguing matchup because Tristan McKenzie is going to make his third start of the season, and two starts for Tristan McKenzie on opposite sides of the spectrum. First start goes out against Minnesota. Absolutely brilliant. Five innings of work. Just gives up one hit. Strikes out 10. He was incredible in terms of what McKenzie was able to do in his first start of the season. Second start of the season, not so much. Another five innings, but seven hits, five earned runs. Gave up a shot to there against the Houston Astros. We know that McKenzie is going to be very good. It's just that he had a late start to the year because of an injury. Maybe a little up and down. The Astros are also pretty good. So I'm very fascinated to see what Tristan McKenzie is going to bring to the table, but even more fascinated by Zach Gallen. I don't know if we brought this up with you or if it was Femi over the weekend, and I'm sure Gil's talked about this quite a bit.
But was you and I talking about it.
Okay, yeah. The home-road splits for Zach Gallen are incredible when you look at them. On the road this season, Zach Gallen, let's see, 5.79 ERA over 37 and a third innings of work. He's given up three home runs. He's got a 33-12 strikeout to walk ratio. At home, he's won six decisions. 0.96 ERA over seven starts. So a very stark contrast over the course of a similar amount of starts, actually. Seven starts each way, but 10 more innings pitched in those seven starts at home. So he's lasting longer in terms of his outings. A 60-7 strikeout to walk ratio for Gallen when he pitches at home.
That's not bad.
It's not. It's brilliant. And it's weird because you look at it, he's coming off of a start on the road against Detroit, when 5 2/3, got nailed for five earned runs, struck out five. These home road splits have been dramatic. And I guess, do you just buy in that Gallen's just going to be the guy that we expect him to be here, and that $1.47 accurately priced? You know, this is a team too, Kelly. I know that we talked about this last time when we were talking about the Arizona Diamondbacks. I think we brought this up just a couple of days ago, where it's interesting to watch the way the market has priced them. Again, the starting pitcher has a lot to do with it. Just earlier in the week when they got smacked around by the Philadelphia Phillies, they were what, plus 120, plus 130 at home against the Philadelphia Phillies, and then here they are laying $1.47 against the Guardians with a very good pitcher. It's because Zach Gallen's on the hill. I'll be fascinated to watch Gallen coming off of that really bad start here at home, coming off the bad start against the Detroit Tigers.
Wait, so going back to that conversation we had, do you think this price is still too cheap on the Diamondbacks?
I think that this is probably right where it should be. Okay. Maybe I would actually argue maybe getting on the verge of a little too expensive.
Okay. Yep.
Because while Gallen is dominant and he deserves it, like, I always find the home road split thing very interesting to follow because still we're only talking about seven games. So it's still an inherently small sample size, just seven starts for Gallen, both home and road. So 14 overall. Like the guy, essentially, put it this way, the guy that has a 5.70 whatever ERA on the road is still the guy that's pitching tonight. So they're like, there's something there. You know what I'm saying? So like, I'm really fascinated to see like what this is going to be when he comes out here today. And especially when you get Tristan McKenzie on the hill on the other side. And speaking of, Cleveland is also one of the reasons why, like, or McKenzie, like, the arms for Cleveland are good. They have a good rotation. McKenzie's going to come around, be healthy, get stretched out, and be able to last in some of these starts. He's going to be a really big weapon for them. I still wouldn't chalk them up as dead in that division. We'll see what the trade deadline looks like. But that division as a whole is, as we know, kind of abhorrent. Both centrals are pretty bad. But, like, like you were mentioning it in the break, like, what, the Houston Astros are the biggest favorites in their division at, what, minus 105?
Yeah. And they are the longest division favorite at minus 105.
Okay, all right. Sorry,
everybody else is larger odds on favorites.
Yes, there we go.
In
sorry,
every other division.
Yep. So we'll see if this is going to be, but this AL Central is going to be fascinating as we watch this thing play out, especially with teams like Cleveland there.
So I'm going to spin it to you then that way. So the Centrals I've been hearing about, these are part of my division question. Division questions for JVT.
Okay.
So both the Centrals, right? We've got Twins minus 215 in the AL Central. Brewers minus 120. Obviously not huge favorites there. But, I mean, are dogs live in both of these divisions?
Oh, I would say for sure in the NL Central. I mean, because so you have, you mentioned it, the Brewers are the favorites, but they're still a half game back from the Pirates.
Yep.
You have the Cincinnati Reds, who have won five straight, who've got Ellie De La Cruz up, who all of a sudden you're looking around and going, dude, we're only one game under 500, right? Like, we could actually start to make a push here and win a terrible division because we're actually playing some relatively solid baseball and have some really good talent on this roster. I would say this one for sure. I think that there's plenty of teams that are going to be live here at a plus price.
What are your thoughts on the Cardinals specifically? Because this was the team a few weeks ago that everybody was like, look, the roster's great. They're off to a bad start. This is the time to jump in on them. And then what? They've gone through another, you know, kind of losing streak or losing couple weeks.
They've lost five straight now. The Cardinals have. They're 2-8 in their last 10. I bet them to win the National League. So, and I got them at like 21-1 or something like that. And that was when they were kind of going through that stretch, like really good stretch of baseball. But like, it's just what irritates you is like the up and down nature of the way that they lose certain games. You know, the other day against the Giants, for example, you go out there, you hit a grand slam early on to plate four, and you're like, okay, here we go. You can get this thing done. All of a sudden, you're pitching, all of a sudden just kind of starts to shrivel up here, give up eight, you end up losing that thing. Like, there's so many different ways in which they have lost, and you're also starting to get the noise now, right? Where the Cardinals are starting to come out and be like, no, don't worry. Our manager, he's fine. You know, everything's good. You had a lot of noise with Marmol and, of course, Tyler O'Neill and what happened there at the beginning of the season. It just feels like this is totally non-scientific. Vibes, not good. Not good vibes with the St. Louis Cardinals. So I think that's a dead bet that I made.
Okay.
At 21-1, I think that National League ticket's dead.
Okay. All right, I'm going to throw a couple others at you. AL East, most likely team to challenge the Rays. I'm not even going to say they're going to beat them, but at least give them a run for their money. Is
there
anybody there?
I thought you were going to throw at them the Baltimore Mountcastles.
No. Well, it could be the Baltimore Mountcastles, but are any of these teams going to really give the Rays a challenge down the – I mean, not down the stretch. What is it, June 16th? Come on, we got a ton of season to go.
Yeah, and they have a five-game lead over Baltimore, 9.5. The Yankees are 9.5 back. I mean, the likely choice is Baltimore, but I just don't think that's going to be the case.
Just not a believer?
Yeah, okay. No, it's not even that. I just think the Rays are good enough that they're going to just be able to maintain their distance between them. I mean, we've seen now quite a few starts from Glasnow. Glasnow's been really freaking good since he's come back. So their starting pitching staff is going to get stronger. I still have, like, real questions in terms of what's going to happen with their bullpen. You know, as we talked about at one point, and I'll double-check the numbers right now, it still might be the case. But in terms of their relievers, the expected fielding independent for their relievers was second worst in Major League Baseball, only behind the Oakland Athletics. Let's see. Still the case right now. Oakland's got a 540 bullpen XFIP, 474 for the Tampa Bay Rays. That's going to be a little bit of a question.
Yeah.
Right? Yikes. Like, wow. As you kind of move forward, is that bullpen going to start to kind of shrivel up a little bit more? Because we're starting to see it. 401 collective ERA for them. So I think maybe there's a reality in which they start to fall back to the pack, and Baltimore maybe starts to catch them. But, like, we'll take the Yankees, for example. Reports indicate that they're going to take their time with Judge, and it's been – what did she say yesterday?
Why would you rush him back?
Right, yeah. And what did she call him yesterday? Aaron Judge and the Judgettes? Like, it's really a team that's heavily reliant on him in the lineup. I would say that if we're talking about division favorites, I think they're the one I have the most faith in, they're just going to keep the rest of their teams at arm's length.
I got another division, basically same question, NL West. Is this a Dodgers minus 215 to win that division right now? Is anybody going to challenge them? Are the Diamondbacks for real? Are the Padres going to have some positive regression here, at least a little bit from what we thought they were going to do preseason, right?
Yep.
And or are the Giants for real? And they're only 4.5 back. Are they going to actually do something this year?
I think the Diamondbacks are pretty for real. Like, I think their bullpen's really solid. Their metrics would point that out. We know that they have a dominant arm, at least at home, at the top.
At least at home.
Right, and Zach Gallen.
They are 5-1.
They are 5-1, is what you're saying?
5-1 to win that division.
I understand why. The Dodgers are who they are for a reason.
Right.
They're deep, and eventually some better luck in terms of availability and pitching is going to come to them. It's only two games. I still think I'm taking my shot with the D-backs, though, man. That offense is good, and that pitching staff's solid.
I like it. I can name, like, three players on the team, but they're my squad now. Why, JVD? Because I can watch them.
I can watch Corbin Carroll's hair flow in the wind as he's rounded the bases. That's pretty good.
All right.
Now, when we come back, our guest in studio, Paul Carr, is going to be with us. Let's talk a little international soccer, what we saw last night over at Allegiant as well between USA and Mexico.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits, like bonus bets, bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 resorts properties located on the Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up at BetMGM. Log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense reminds you to play responsibly. Visit BetMGM for terms. Got to be 21. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire in 7 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, really excited to welcome in Paul Carr, who is here at the desk, Senior Director of Content, True Media Sports, does a lot of different stuff for a lot of different folks here in town, doing work for CBS, right up at the booth. Right. So you were actually, it's funny, I totally forgot, I was driving home yesterday, and I'm driving by Allegiant, and I'm like, man, what is happening? Like, I'm seeing a lot of people in Mexico jerseys, and then it hit me. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right, we got USA-Mexico today. So a 3-0 win for the Americans, first off. Walk people through what happened yesterday, because it was a somewhat chaotic end. Yep. People were surprised about a very, we won't call it quick, but an early stop in extra time last night.
Yeah, so the U.S. was up 3-0. It's a typical U.S.-Mexico game, which is very physical. A lot of handbags, as they would say in England, people pushing and shoving. 4 red cards, 2 for each side. But then what cut the game short, so a couple years ago, CONCACAF instituted a anti-discriminatory chant policy, which stemmed from generally, Mexico fans yelling something when the opponents take a goal kick, it's basically a homophobic slur. Mm. And so CONCACAF instituted this multi-step policy where, you know, you pause the game, you stop the game for a few minutes, et cetera, et cetera. The last one of those is basically you can stop the game and call it. And whether directly related to that or not, CONCACAF was a little vague on it. They'd put up 12 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the second half, and they stopped it after about half that.
Yep.
Now, stoppage time is at the ref's discretion, so there's no right, wrong thing. There's no gambling angle, I don't think, here.
But there were some that were trying to make it. Like, there's still 4 minutes. Like, yeah, relax. Right. It's 8 minutes in. You're fine.
Right, yeah. So I don't think there's anything, you know, there's no angle there from a betting standpoint.
Yep.
But it really was just like a mercy killing. It's like, all right, it's 3-0.
Right.
We don't need anyone else to get hurt, suspended, whatever it is. So I'm fine with that. It changed nothing unless maybe you had over 3.5.
So this is part of the CONCACAF Nations League. That was the semifinals. They get the final against Canada. First off, just general soccer question. The dynamic between USA and Mexico, I feel like that has kind of shifted a little bit in the Americans' favor. So is this something that's legitimate? Like, as we move forward, there's it seems like there's an emerging gap between the two.
Yeah. I mean, so Mexico obviously dominated this series for, I mean, up until the early 2000s at least. But since 2000, the U.S. has a winning record against Mexico. They're unbeaten in 6 straight games against Mexico overall, which ties the longest streak for the U.S. ever. They beat them in 2 finals 2 years ago. They beat them here. Mexico's just, frankly, not as good as they were 5-10 years ago. They're not as intimidating. The U.S. has this young generation that is not scared and just wants to go right at you. You saw a lot of them, you know, standing up for each other and such last night. The U.S. is pretty undisputed the kings of the region right now.
Okay, I like it. So they do get Canada in the CONCACAF Nations League final. What are some early thoughts there on that? Because I've read, too, it's kind of an emerging rivalry.
Yep.
Like, it's kind of – the rivalry has shifted, right? It was at first to the south.
Yeah.
Now it's emerging to the north.
This is very much a little brother, big brother sort of thing. And since that Canada just made their second World Cup last year, before that they'd only made it in 1986. But they won the qualifying in CONCACAF. They finished first. Now, finishing first and finishing third, you still qualify. There's no, like, trophy for it or anything. Mm. So it's not – they didn't win a tournament in the same sense. Canada hasn't won a CONCACAF tournament since 2000. But they've got this up-and-coming generation. They've got several, you know, young stars. They're trying to merge it with their veterans. And they're not as good 1 through 11 as the U.S. They're not as deep yet. But they're kind of where the U.S. was, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, where you're getting there. And they're the legit, probably second-best team in CONCACAF right now.
Okay.
So they talk a lot. They think they're probably a little bit better, which makes this fun. So this should be a good game. I don't expect the theatrics that you have against Mexico, but it should be a pretty competitive game, just not quite as nuts.
So what's the difference between what we're watching with the Nations League final and the Gold Cup that gets started next Saturday?
They're both CONCACAF tournaments.
Right.
Nations League basically has a group stage and then semis and final, but it's stretched over a year or two. Mm-hmm. Gold Cup is your traditional soccer tournament where everything's done in 3-4 weeks. Again, there's a group stage. There's a knockout stage. For the U.S., they'll have a different roster. This roster for Nations League is mostly European guys. For Gold Cup, it's going to be mostly MLS guys. Well, it just has to do with getting guys a break and everything like that. U.S. will still be favored. You know, if they don't win, it's probably going to be a disappointment. And if they run into Mexico again, Mexico will have largely the same team. They're addressing this a little bit differently. They may have a different coach.
Yeah.
Who knows? But, yeah, I mean, the U.S. is going to be the favorite. Anything less than that, you know, it's in the U.S. Anything less than a win is going to be disappointing to some extent, yeah.
Really quick, so if we're looking at it, because we do have lines up for next Saturday, instead of diving into specific games, any recommendations for anybody who wants to start handicapping and getting ready for it, whether it's like rosters, availability statistics?
For the Gold Cup?
Yeah, for the Gold Cup.
I haven't looked at the futures on it, to be honest. Yeah. But, I mean, U.S. has got to be your favorite. Canada ought to be your second favorite. You know, if there's a decent line on, say, Canada getting to the final, I think that would be a pretty reasonable thing. I'm not touching Mexico. Mm-hmm. They're just a mess. Like I said, they may change coaches in the week between this tournament and next week. And anyone beyond that is, you know, different degrees of long shot. So going against anyone but those top two, you know, Canada, you can probably get a decent price, at least to reach the final, maybe to win the whole thing. But yeah, it's U.S. or Mexico. Anything other than that, you're just kind of throwing darts.
So the other thing that is, of course, coming up, it's so funny. Like, it's such a low key busy summer, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, I'm a basketball guy. You have the FIBA World Cup actually coming up later in hoops. So like, there's going to be a lot there. So we have the Women's World Cup coming up this summer as well. So what are we expecting in terms of the Women's World Cup? Obviously out here, there's probably a lot of thoughts of like, let's go,
yep.
USA. They got to be
yep.
the big favorite, but it doesn't seem like there's that big of a gap between them and England.
Yeah, US is the favorite, yep. but yeah, you're looking at a plus 250-ish, give or take, depending on your book.
Yeah, for those watching, we've got them right there.
England's not far behind them, plus 350. The story of all these top teams, these top five teams especially, they're all dealing with some level of injuries or players missing. You know, the US has lost Mallory Swanson, Katerina Macario, two probable starter. Swanson's been their top scorer for the last couple years. England has lost four players from their team that won Euros last year to either injury or retirement, and they have a couple others that are on the bubble. Spain has a lot of players in and out. Germany reached the Euro finals last year and lost to England. They have injury questions as well. France has a new coach, and their players kind of quit on their old coach, and now they're back. So all these teams have these big right. question marks. US is definitely still the best team, but it seems like every tournament, you know, that number gets right. a little bit shorter,
yep.
or a little bit longer, I guess I should say, to win the title.
Is there anything in terms of like the middle range here if we're talking about like Australia, Sweden, Netherlands, or is there just too much of a talent discrepancy where you're probably sticking with, if you're betting anything, these top six or top yep. five choices?
I mean, on the list, I kind of like Germany.
Okay.
You can probably find, I saw plus 750 on them elsewhere this morning. I think their midfield's especially strong. Australia, so the tournament's in Australia, New Zealand, mm-hmm. so they're at home. So that's something.
Yeah.
They've always kind of underachieved mostly on the global stage, so I'm not real excited about that. Sweden at 14-1 is interesting. Sweden is just always a thorn in everybody's side. They're like, they're good. They're never one of the top like two or three teams, but they're always right there. You know, they've finished second at the Olympics in 2016. They beat the U.S. A couple tournaments ago. So they're always a tough out. I don't know that I'm going to pick them to win, but mm-hmm. maybe go deep might be another option for that. And something else to keep in mind, this is a 32-team tournament for the first time. So in the group stage, your discrepancy between, we'll say, you know, the U.S. and the bottom of the group, like Vietnam, Philippines at the bottom yeah. of some of these groups, it's going to be pretty wide.
Really?
So your yeah. top teams shouldn't have much trouble getting out of the groups. Like Germany has a pretty cake group, which is part of the reason I kind of like them
okay.
To go somewhere. So just keep an eye on it. Some of the groups are a little tougher than others. But I wouldn't expect, you know, any of these teams we're looking at here to not get out of the group stage. Then at least in the round of 16, and you got the knockout version.
All right, we got the third. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, JVT, for regular Numbers Games listeners, too, Paul liking Germany is going to be a big surprise. Big surprise.
Yeah.
Men
yeah,
or
shocker.
Women, right?
I think I've had a future on Germany for every men's or women's World Cup for okay. the last, you know, 10, 15 years, it seems like, one way or the other. So, yeah, it is kind of a reflex play of sorts. But I think it's legit also, as I outlined.
So really quick, our last minute or so here, I'll just ask the general question. In these markets on game-to-game basis, is there a lot of – do you see market support for the U.S. that, like, edges on public? Like, are they a little yeah. overvalued on a match-to-match
generally,
basis?
Generally, I yeah. think that works for the women. I think it works for the men.
Yep.
You know, you look like this game against Canada, U.S. is around even money to win. It's probably a little bit generous. So, yeah, on the whole, the U.S. tends to be a public team
yeah.
in the U.S., of course. And sometimes you even compare, like, a U.S. line versus a European line. You see that. It's not a giant gap.
Right.
But you see, you know, a few cents here and there that could make a difference. It matters.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, especially in a tournament like this where in the Men's World Cup, generally USA is going to be find themselves plus price underdog,
right.
whatever. These women are going to be
right.
favorites a lot of the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, big favorites. You have, you know, when they play some of the underdogs in the early rounds, they're going to be, you know, massive goal spreads, you know, 4, right. 5, 6.5, because US beat Thailand 13-0 last time. So I don't expect that to happen again.
Right.
But it's not off the table against Vietnam either.
Cool. Paul Carr, hey, so what are you doing? What else? What's the plan for the rest of the day? Huh?
Today's game notes. Got to get everything done. Was going to go sit by the pool, but the weather doesn't seem to be
still raining,
playing
huh?
along right now. Yeah, so we're going to do that. Going to meet up with some people tonight, find a good place for dinner.
Cool.
Go from there.
Well, I know I'm not Gil, but thanks for coming in.
No,
appreciate
great.
It.
Good to see
I
you.
Do have like the 5 o'clock stubble like Gil
there you
does.
Go.
Yeah, I
got
to shave.
So. You got the jacket. Jacket like Gil.
Exactly. All right, that does it for us, the numbers game. Gil will be back on Monday, by the way. So, Paul, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming in. Have a good weekend, everybody.